set the charges with one of his precious pre-dark timing pencils. The friends headed into the trees, the bridge far from sight, when the first flat explosion sounded, closely followed by a cavalcade of smaller detonations, crunching wood, and multiple splashes. Mildred watched the birds take flight overhead, frightened by the noises.
Sure hope that works.
Find out soon enough if it doesn't.
And Ryan walked into the growing shadows of the Tennessee pine trees. The carpeting of pine needles underfoot made walking pleasant, and the companions put several miles between them and the ruined bridge before stopping for a needed break.
How far away are we?
Christy sat down on a tree stump. Unfolding some silver wrapping, she popped a stick of 100-year-old chewing gum into her mouth and started to suck the flavor from the confection. It took too long for the stuff to get soft enough to actually chew. The wrapper she tucked into a pocket to hide the fact that they had been here.
Tell you in a minute.
J.B. slid on dry socks from his backpack, then his shoes. His pants had dried from the quick march, and he had changed into one of his own shirts a good mile ago. Moving to a grassy area where the branches didn't block a view of the sky, the armorer used his mini-sextant to shoot the sun.
We are... yep, just south of the Shiloh battlefield, east of the redoubt, and west of the ville full of those inbred crazies.
I remember them. That's probably where Silas gets his sec-men.
Indeed, madam. Sec-men or his slaves.
Doc took the opportunity to reload the Lama. The bulky weapon was difficult enough to charge, standing still, and impossible to do so while walking. His sure hands used a small brass brush to purge each individual firing chamber, spent black powder raining like ebony snow. An exact measure of fresh powder went in next, then the lead ball, and finally a wad of cotton. He tamped down each charge with the built-in lever, then smeared a dollop of grease on the chambers as protection from wetness and a lethal chain reaction cross-firing. The physician nodded while awkwardly massaging her stiff shoulder. Mildred knew she was carrying too many medical supplies, but couldn't force herself to leave anything potentially useful behind. Screwing the cap back on his canteen, Ryan wiped his mouth and glanced at the sky.
Day's nearly done. We'll use what light there is left to head east toward the redoubt from here on. Need to make sure we have some place to retreat in case of trouble. If it's clear, tomorrow we'll start sweeping the valley in sections and find the base.
Damn chill, all blues.
Jack rubbed the scratch on his cheek from the near miss before. There was a faint taste of blood in his mouth, and when Jack turned to spit, he saw a tiny flower struggling to grow through the thick layer of needles. Hawking into the bushes, the teenager gently pushed the needles away, giving the tiny plant a fighting chance. His wife had always liked daisies.
We ace the blues and Silas. That way we can be sure he'll never bother Front Royal again. Or anybody else, for that matter.
Stealthily, the companions moved through the forest. The tall green pines were dense, the air fresh with their clean scent. There were no signs of people having ever been in these woods, not even debris from pre-dark houses. The land was pristine, almost primordial. Occasionally, the call of a wild bird would echo through the branches, or a squirrel would race by. Dean tracked the passage of the rodents with his blaster, but didn't fire. He knew they were too close to the blue shirts to risk shooting at anything. Forcing their way through some blackberry bushes, the companions paused at the sight of a bear tunnel going through some of the thickets. Placing a finger on the trigger of his long blaster, Ryan knelt to look inside the dim recesses of the thorny bushes.
Nothing in sight.
Jack kicked at some dried droppings on the ground.
Month, maybe more. Bear, long gone.
J.B. picked a berry off a bush and inspected it carefully.
Odd. Animals don't usually leave a ready source of food.
Maybe he got chased away by a bigger bear.
Dean's father didn't reply, but chambered around into the styre. A few hundred yards later, they found the half-consumed carcass of a buck deer on the stony ground, the rotting meat completely covered with busy black ants. The ripening stench was awful, and they hurriedly arced around the clearing, staying within the canopy of the trees. Climbing over some fallen oak trees, Ryan discovered a tiny babbling brook, really no more than a creek, cutting through a tangle of underbrush. Tadpoles and crayfish were busy in the soupy mud. The water read clean on his rad counter, so he filled his canteen and moved onward. The rest of the companions hardly broke their stride, stepping over the trickle of water. A gully cut through the trees, saplings, and birch, standing ghostly white amid the dark pines. Climbing onto the raised land, the companions started across a sloped field of stubby grass. Soon a river could be heard flowing nearby. J.B. tilted his head toward the noise.
Sounds like it's going in the right direction. How about making another raft?
Had enough of that.
Stopping abruptly, Mildred stared hard at the northern sky.
Well, I'll be damned. Didn't we leave the burning Hummer west of us?
Sure did.
Then J.B. sniffed. What was that bitter smell? Mildred pointed.
Then what the hell is that?
A thick plume of smoke rose over the forest. The winds were thinning it across the sky until it vanished, but this close, the plume was a solid black.
Way too big to be a campfire. Maybe the forest is on fire.
Jack drew his Colt Python.
Animals not left. They be feist.
Her hair anxiously waving, Christy sniffed a few times.
That's coal. A coal-burning fire.
Plenty of coal in Tennessee. Perhaps it is a local blacksmith.
Have to be a damn huge one.
True, madam. I stand corrected. Perhaps some local baron has built a foundry to reclaim pre-dark metal.
Could be anything, even a power plant.
Ryan had encountered coal-burning power stations when he traveled with a trader. Mostly they were crude things, a rusty boiler whistling steam at a homemade turbine attached to 100 car generators. But even a rickety machine like that made a lot of electricity. Lights, heaters, electric fences.
Silas.
Doc absently fingered the silver lion's head on his sword stick. Ryan loosened the Sig Sauer in its holster.
Silent wreck. 5-yard spread. Go.
The companions spread out and started into the forest once more. After a while, they left the trees and found themselves standing on the bank of a river. The water rushed over rocks, foaming white and dangerous. On the other side was a dirt road, deeply cut with rain gullies. Beyond that were thick bushes and more trees. Other than the companions, there was nothing else in sight.
There,
Jack gestured with his Colt. A short way up the river was another bridge, wider and more detailed than any of the others they had encountered so far.
Odd. That's the first bridge with handrails. The others were just flat planks without railings.
Doesn't look pre-dark. Maybe it's the first one the Blues built. You always do the first of anything a bit fancier than needed.
It does not go anywhere. They built a bridge, but not a road.
Changed minds?
Or ran out of slaves.
Pensive, Ryan looked at the sky. Night was rapidly approaching. Should they continue to the redoubt, or check out the smoke? Tough choice.
We'll wreck the smoke. But if we encounter any large groups of blue shirts, we run for the redoubt. Understood?
All nodded their assent. The companions stayed within the cover provided by the trees until reaching the bridge. J.B. checked underneath from the shore, and they crossed without trouble. Past the road, they went into the woods and found the pines were only a few yards deep. They stopped in a neat line, the land beyond dotted with stumps and sloping away to a valley.
Eureka!
Doc thumbed back the hammer on the Lama. A sprawling vill filled the floor of the mountain valley. At one end, a brick building with a tall circular chimney pouring out thick smoke, insulated wires running from a battery of transformers and spreading across the valley in a black spiderweb of technology. New brick buildings stood alongside pre-dark structures and a shiny new Quonset hut. A stone wall was being built around the enclosure, the tiny figures of Sekhmen visible as they patrolled its top. Hundreds of people were moving about on the ground, doing incomprehensible things at that distance. Rising above everything was a huge white bowl set within a framework of steel girders and I-beams that rested on a slab of concrete. A slim pole thrust from the center of the bowl, pointing toward the cloudy sky, and tiny lights winked.
Dark night. This is even bigger than the anthill mock-up of DC.
Fireblast. They have a bastard tank.
Dead tank. See there? A couple of the sec men are hammering on the top hatch with chisels, trying to get inside.
Ryan relaxed slightly.
Good.